and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, your host, Yudalee Wickham-Ashby. And today, as we continue to explore our world around us, I will be talking with Neil Dowden and Rachel Goldstone from the Prison Fellowship here in Barbados. Welcome to the program, Neil and Rachel.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, thank you for really agreeing to join and share some information about the Prison Fellowship. So let's start with you, Neil. Tell us who you are and why you became involved with the Prison Fellowship.
Well, I became involved with Prison Fellowship about 35, 36 years ago. After I gave my life to the Lord, the person that was my mentor, Brother Thomas Watts, he was the head of the prison ministries at the time. Working with him, I just flowed into the prison. And I had a brief time when I was out of the island in London. And that's the only time that I've not been part of the prison ministry, when I was working in London for the last 20 years. And upon my retirement and return to Barbados in 2013, I continued physically with Prison Fellowship. But while I was in London, I used to support Prison Fellowship with barrels and food stuff and clothes, etc. So that's my involvement with Prison Fellowship. It started long before I was even married.
Okay. So tell us in terms of where Prison Fellowship was when you first joined and where it is now. What developments have taken place?
When I first joined the ministry, we were basically an outreach ministry that used to show films into the prison and carry the gospel to the prison, as well as the district hospitals and other places. Fast forward in years on, we developed it on the ministry because we realized that it was not only dealing with inmates, but when somebody goes to prison, the whole family is impacted, and that includes the children. So after we started doing the Angel Tree program some 30-something years ago, where we used to get a toy for the children and give it to them as from their father or their mother who was in prison. In those years, we used to drive around the island and distribute the toys. I think it was in the fifth year of doing that, we visited a house that had six children, and we took the toys to the children. The lady took us into the house and showed us that her cupboard was empty. So we quickly recognized that you can't only give children toys, because if you give them toys at Christmas and they were hungry, it didn't make any impact. So then we started giving Christmas presents and the food hamper to every family. Then we saw the need for children to get school uniforms, etc., because that's another trying time for parents. So that was the birth of the back-to-school drive over 15 years ago. We started giving uniform vouchers to children and books. Last year, we did over 500 children, and we gave each one of them a $100 voucher. Some of them, we paid their petty fees, and we bought their school books and shoes. So it's evolving all the time. While we were doing that service, COVID came along, and we recognized that the inmates were suffering. So just after the first lockdown, we started to give food vouchers to popular to the families. Then we had to quickly shift into gear because some of the people didn't have the devices for school. So we started to distribute tablets and laptops to children who were in need. We even had to buy some dongles because some of the houses did not have Wi-Fi connection. So we bought the portable dongles. In all, we tried to assist the family as a whole. In the same way we get clothing for the inmates, their children, these clothing come from England. We get about 4 or 5 barrels a month. So we support them with clothing. And the last year plus, we started a soup kitchen every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, where we provide a warm meal. And up to last Friday, our total was over 115 people.
Fabulous.
I've said a mouthful.
Yes. But you're demonstrating the high quality work you're doing and the essential work that you're doing to meet the needs of a particular population. Now, Rachel, tell me how you became involved, because you were volunteering with the organization.
My involvement was due to, as a UE student, we are expected to do our give back hours every semester full-time students and part-time students, and a colleague of mine who we would have previously been volunteering at the Salvation Army, but because of COVID, they would have stopped the program because they do similarly to Prison Fellowship, where they provide meals for the homeless and the impoverished in their community. So the young lady would have told me what I would have called around to places, and she got into contact with Neil, and then we both started to come late last year. So I would have always wanted to choose an organization that is linked to my faith as a Christian, and therefore I would have done the Salvation Army at first, would have wanted to do Unborn Justice at one point, but at the time they weren't taking people, so we would have ended up here at Prison Fellowship, and now we have been volunteering with them for over a year and a half, and I would have seen firsthand what they do here, which is to provide the clothing, to provide the school supplies, as well as the meals for the homeless, so that they are not always around being hungry, but at least for those 3 days, the Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, they are fed. And also whatever I have that I wouldn't use, like clothing and so on, or I know people who have clothing that they're not using, I also bring it so that I can also contribute outside of my volunteering, so that they have more than enough for their several ventures.
As a young woman, what impact has working with the Prison Fellowship made on you?
I would say it has made me more aware of how we do not realize how many people are in need, because not every person that is in need is on the road. There are a lot of people who obviously have families, have homes, but in those homes there are children and parents and grandparents who are suffering. And as we are believers, we are commissioned to go out and preach the gospel. But Jesus also says that we are to clothe those who are in need and to feed them. And a lot of that doesn't happen the way that it should. So it just birthed in me further fervor to help those in need, even outside of when I am here, when I see those who would need food, would need clothing. I often say to my mom, I would love that when we are on the road, that we can have maybe a box of clothing, we can have some snacks or something in the car, that when people come to us and they're asking for something, that we're able to give something tangible than just giving them words, because words mean nothing if they're hungry and if they're cold. So that would be the impact that it has made on my life thus far.
Well, very true words you have spoken in terms of being practical in how we are supporting individuals who come to us in need.
Yes.
Yes, words will encourage and maybe motivate the individual for a short period, but having that practical, tangible support is also just as powerful. Yes. So, Neil, approximately how many volunteers do you have working with the Prison Fellowship?
Well, Prison Fellowship has a lot of volunteers, but the ones that actively volunteer, like myself, that give their time on a daily basis, we've only got a few. We've got the university students who come. We've got a core of about 5 or 6 of us that are here every day. Because one of the things that I didn't mention also is that we try to help, as I said, the families of inmates. We even keep some of the children so that the mothers can go to work. So we even provide like a creche facility so that the moms can work, because child care is very expensive. And this August we plan to also have a summer camp so that the children of the inmates who would not normally get food, etc., will come to Prison Fellowship. We will feed them, look after them, teach them, give them some outings, etc., so they feel good about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, I must say that I have recently visited your headquarters there in Carrington Village. And I myself am very impressed with the not only high standard of work, but the volume of work that the Prison Fellowship is doing. And I must say, I must commend you and all who are involved with the Prison Fellowship for the excellent work that you're doing in not only reaching the inmates themselves, but their family members and other vulnerable individuals within the community. Now, let us look at your actual work with the inmates. Are you able to communicate with the inmates outside of providing maybe clothing and finances? How else do you work with the inmates?
Prior to COVID, we taught courses in the prison every Tuesday and Thursday. And we even had one big graduation as well. After COVID or during COVID, we had to find a way to deal with that situation. So what we did is that we started to have services, record them, and send them to the prison. So at least the spiritual part of it is continued. With regard to the teaching courses, I have been in talks with the education department at the prison, and we are working on getting our courses done online so that whatever happens, by the beginning of next month, we will start back our two courses that we did. Well, I don't know what days we'll get, but we used to have courses in prison, so I'm hoping to start that back next month.
Okay, nice. Now, let's continue on in terms of, because I know while I was on the premises, you would have received numerous phone calls relating to inmates. Tell us about some of the actual requests.
Well, the requests vary as per inmate. All the forms that we get for the school clothes, the inmates send the forms to us to contact their families and get the caregiver out here to come and collect school. We also provide, like if they go into prison, we will help them with clothes to get out. When they come out, we've acted as a go-between in helping them to get housing. We work with the People Empowerment Ministry, and we've got a close working relationship with them. So we refer some of these inmates who've got problems to the welfare department. Basically, we try to give advice as well as assistance. We also work with Mr. Kimar Safri and the homeless shelter. So we could recommend ex-inmates who are homeless to them to be housed, and which has always been done. So we've got working links. We also try to do certain basic things, like when we have our soup kitchen, we've got a young man that comes in and does barbering. We want to do like blood pressure checks and blood sugar checks. And we've got the trainee doctors at the American University, and they're on board. They're going to volunteer, and they will come and help us to do the blood sugar checks and the blood pressure checks, etc. Because these guys that are homeless and are living rough, they don't take the time out to look after their health as well. So we tried to do a holistic program. We've converted a shower so that when they are on the premises, they can have a shower. We provide toiletries, etc. Because if you're living rough and you need a shower, we do all of that just to assist them. Because at the end of the day, you want to make them feel first like if they're part of this community. And you don't want to just give them clothes to put on, you know, on dirty skin. Right. We provide everything.
Okay. Now, Rachel, as a young woman, and I have to keep looking at the fact that you are a young person who may not have been conscious of some of what's transpiring within our country, and you see some young people like yourselves off track, what are your thoughts and how do you think as another young person you can reach out to them?
I would say that it all starts with a conversation. So when you are around others and, you know, they might not be far off, you know, have a conversation, find out what is going on. Because as I study psychology, I often look for the backstory or why did you end up here, rather than being judgmental or saying, you know, well, look at this person, you know, how they could be like this, they're so young. There's always a reason. Sometimes it is bad company, sometimes families put them out for whatever reason, and then they too, like some of the older persons who are on the streets, have to resort to, you know, finding somewhere to be because they cannot find a place to call home. And I know organizations such like Salvation Army, where of course they would have living facilities, not every person has something like that in terms of organization. I know Kimar Safri himself trades, but there are also those who do not want to feel like they are poor or they're impoverished because of pride or maybe because they're ashamed. So I think that the first thing is just to have a conversation, find out how you can help them. As a believer, of course, asking them, you know, would you like me to pray for you? And just, as I would have said before, not just giving words, but giving something tangible that it would help them throughout their day to see that, you know, they have outlets, they have avenues that are out there to help them, and they are not down and out and downtrodden, but there is always an outlet to assist them. So that is what I would do as a young person, just cover those options. And you know, at the end of the day, know that after that conversation, after that encounter, they know that there's something to help them.
Nice. Now, Neil, you would have mentioned prior to this program that you have some individuals with disabilities who, you know, come to your center on a regular basis. How does this work? How does this fit into your program, your objectives?
Our program is not one that would ever discriminate. So we've got families that we help because of our soup kitchen. We provide meals for about 7 or 8 families. And in these families, there is one family that has a disabled child, and there's another person with disability that would come. And what we've recognized is that the young lady with the disability is at home doing nothing. So what we've offered is that she could come out at the center here with our volunteers. She's a very pleasant young lady. She can answer phones just to make her feel as though, you know, life is not just sitting home and waiting to go by. We try to provide options because she's only 18 years old. And not because you've got this bill, you've got to hide. You know, gone from those days. So
right.
We try to interact and say to her, you know, you can be all that you can be. Because we also, in future, because it was stopped because of COVID, but we're going to provide different training and lessons for the children of inmates, including music, dance, swimming, that's the name of you, as well as the educational part of it. But we don't want to be pigeonholed as just the educational part. So we're trying to help these young people, ex-inmates as well as the ones in our community, because we don't only want to impact the inmates, but we're in Carrington Village. So we also help our neighbors, and we work with our neighbors and their children. So it's not only a program that helps ex-inmates. And one of the things that I forgot to mention, Yudli, is that we've got numerous equipment to do debushing, etc., and gardening. And so we also help ex-inmates when they come out. Like if they've got a yard to do, also we provide the equipment, lawnmower, rakes and stuff, and they go do the job so that they can be employed. Because one of the problems that we have is that nobody wants to employ them. Hence, that's why they're on the street and they're hungry. And sometimes they commit a crime and go back to prison because they don't have any food. So the soup kitchen was there to make sure that that's not a reason to go back to prison. If you're hungry, come to us and we'll feed. You don't have to commit a crime to get food. And we try to find like-minded employers that would work with us. And we try to change the culture. They realize that these guys would have paid their debt to society. And they just need a chance to work. And that's what we're trying to do as well.
Mm-hmm. So, Neil, have you encountered any inmates with disabilities during your years?
They weren't severely disabled, but I've known a few that were disabled. But they went through the prison system, came out. I know one guy, he's working. He's got a bad leg, but he works. And what they gave for the employed. So we don't look at the individual with it. We look at everybody as a person to be helped.
Right. Well, I just made that point to demonstrate to listeners that sometimes we pigeonhole people so much so that they would not even think that an individual with a disability may be imprisoned. Okay, so Rachel, you have been working with the Prison Fellowship in terms of helping to plan and do other tasks. I know recently there was a concert. Share a little about this with us.
Okay, so the Goodness of God concert would have just taken place on Sunday, June the 19th, Father's Day. And it was an effort to raise funds for our back-to-school drive. So as Neil would have mentioned before, we tried to assist the children of the inmates so that they have their school supplies, their petty fees paid, and their school books for those who are in primary, and then the fees for the books for those who are in secondary school. And we had some of our artists, Nisha Wood, John Yard, Jermaine, just to name a few.
Patrick Ford,
who is a disabled man, who is a double amputee, and he performed twice. So as you would have mentioned just now about how we like to pigeonhole those who are in prison, we also like to pigeonhole those who are out in society thinking that, you know, they can't do anything. And his mantra is that a disability does not, you know, limit your ability, and he performed so beautifully in his dancing. And I would just say that it was an experience that I would never forget. There were also some of the members from Barna who are there, and of course Udali, you know firsthand about that organization. And it was also a pleasure to have them with us as well, because we don't want anyone, whether able-bodied or disabled, to be left out of what we are doing here at Christian Fellowship. We want everyone to be a part. We want that you feel welcome, you feel at home. So I would say that the concert was a success, and we are planning to host many more in the future, not just for fundraising efforts, but, you know, to have an event that all can come and enjoy. That they will see our local talent, some of the worship team that was there, Renika, and those who would have backed her. They are wonderfully blessed and anointed, and it was a pleasure and a blessing to hear them sing and bring glory and honor to God. So the concert was really wonderful. So those who missed, we hope that the next time we host, that you will come out and participate in our concerts and whatever else we will host in the near future.
Okay, now Neil, tell us in terms of the soup kitchen, because you've been talking a lot about the soup kitchen, and you provide over 115 foods 3 days a week. What has the feedback been like in terms of, you know, how do people feel about it and your source for the ingredients to prepare these meals?
Well, to answer the first question, we are seeing, and Rachel could attest to this, every week we see more people. It's just like the people who are living on the street doing their own evangelism, because what they're saying is that they found bread, so they tell somebody else where to come and find bread. That's what we should do as Christians in any case, but they do it in a reverse way with the food. It's like a beggar finding bread and then telling another beggar where to come and find the bread. So we're seeing an increase. In terms of funding and source of funding, we've got some lovely donors, and we don't get a lot of donations from corporate Barbados towards our soup kitchen. But we've got a group of people that work with us that we would just chip in and get the job done. There's some corporate entities that do help us. And if you allow me, I would like to shout out people like Zephyrin's Bakery, because they give us bread every week. Chickmunk Foods, they give us meat. And there's the farms in St. Lucie, the name has gone from me, Mr. Gibson. I can't remember the name of the farm, but he knows who he is, Mr. Gibson. They give us endless meat supply. So there are a few socially conscious citizens as well who bring in like lettuce and things like that. So we do have help from the community. But what we're saying is that, as you know, we still can't meet all the needs that we have, because even with, in some cases, we've only got to help who we can help, and there is going to be an increase. So we're appealing to not only corporate Barbies, but social-minded members of society. You know, when you go to the supermarket and you pick up 2 things of sweet corn, if you pick up 2 and say, well, this is for Prison Fellowship, because we've got the, and I failed to mention them, and I need to apologize for this, the Hindu Association as well, they give us a donation of foodstuff every month. And they come on board when there's bank holidays. They give us a rest and they provide the food for bank holidays. So our kitchen, we don't cook on bank holidays. They bring the food to us on bank holidays and we share them out. So there's a lot of goodwill in society. But like you said, the numbers are increasing. So we need as much help and support.
All right. So Neil and Rachel, our time is catching up with us quickly. And as I told you at the beginning, you know, when you're talking about something that you're passionate about, the time goes by rather quickly.
Yes.
What I would, yeah. So Rachel, tell me again, in terms of your outlook for Prison Fellowship, how would you want to see it develop? And would you want to see more young people involved with the volunteerism of it?
Yes, most definitely. I would love to see a lot more young people helping in whatever capacity they have, whether they come to volunteer with us at Prison Fellowship or, you know, what I would have said before, where, you know, when you see those in need, you're willing to give what you have, because sometimes we have things at home we're not using. And we have sometimes food stuffs that would stay in the cupboard for, you know, sometimes years, and the expiration date has not passed. So I would encourage any young person to, you know, change your outlook on those who are in need and be more willing to help, because it can easily become you. And this is not to be pessimistic, but in reality, you don't know what will happen. So it is always best to give to those who are in need, because you may very well need someone to help you in the future, wherever you may end up. So that is what I would say is my encouragement to young people who are listening and who would want to help in volunteerism and to help those who are in need.
Well, let me say thank you very much, Rachel. And to all the students from the UE Give Back program who are volunteering with some agency or the other. Neil, you have the final word in, again, just saying to Barbados and listeners around the world about the work of Prison Fellowship and the support that you give and still is needed.
Well, I just want to encourage everyone to let us try to be a part of the solution rather than talking about the problem. You know, it's easy to condemn people and say that nothing good could come out. But if we try to be a part of the solution, then little by little we eradicate the problem. You know, my grandmother used to say, many hands make light work. So if we work together, we can achieve a lot.
Tell us, Neil, one of your memorable stories or the success stories that you feel really proud about.
We had one gentleman that came from prison and he was brought to Prison Fellowship. We housed him for about 2 years. He eventually started working in a hotel in maintenance, and he's now married. He's a deacon in his church, and he started a family. And he still gives back to Prison Fellowship. One of the young men that helped to organize the concert, he's an ex-inmate from Dodds. He did our course, and he graduated, and he keeps giving back to Prison Fellowship. Every month he brings meat and stuff to Prison Fellowship. So it's not all doom and gloom and bad, but sometimes we focus on the bad and we don't see the good. And there's lots more that I can tell, but we don't have the time. But they are success stories and we want to celebrate them.
Correct. Now, how can we reach you? Where are you located, and share your numbers with us?
We're located in Carrington Village. The Government of Barbados has given us the old Carrington Village Primary School to use as our headquarters, and we are so grateful to them. Our telephone number, 548-1112, that's our landline. My cell number, 256-7205, and we can be contacted via email. We've got a Facebook page, and I'm told by Rachel and the young people that they'll be setting up Instagram page soon. So just look out for us, and no donation or no assistance is too small. Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you very much, Neil and Rachel. And I want to commend the Prison Fellowship for the fabulous work you're doing, not just with the inmates, but with the families and other vulnerable groups in our society. God's blessings on you. You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudley Wickham Ashby, and I, can be reached on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. You can email me, visionsbarbados@gmail.com, and you can check this and past episodes on the VOB92.9.com website. So until next week, love yourself and love your neighbor as you love yourself. Ciao.